There are reports today that 95-year-old Nelson Mandela is continuing to improve, although he's still in the hospital where he's been since June for that recurring lung infection. His resilience has reminded South Africans and the world of that astonishing moment in February 1990 when he stepped out of prison after serving 27 years for his role in the fight against apartheid, the state-enforced system of racial segregation imposed by the country's white minority. That elegant suit, that graceful walk, and ultimately his ability to forgive the very people who'd held him and tortured and killed many of his colleagues. Our next guest, Ahmad Kathrada, saw that struggle up close. Kathrada began his political activism in the 1940s when he was just a teen. He eventually became a leader in the ANC, the African National Conference, where he worked alongside people like Walter Sisulu and Nelson Mandela. In fact, Kathrada and Mandela were in prison together for about 27 years, 18 of them, at that infamous Robben Island. You might have recently seen Ahmed give President Obama and his family a tour of that island prison. We reached him recently in Johannesburg. Talk a little bit about your connection, both in prison. When you think back to that, do you think back to that time? You give the tours, but I'm wondering if you really feel what it felt like to be in that prison now.
Part of those visits is just to relate our experiences. But I must say that the first few were quite traumatic, when just to see how we were spent years and years in that little cell. But it has now become routine, and we don't feel that anymore.
Books have been written about what happened in the little cells, but can you tell us more about it? What was life like imprisoned by the white minority during apartheid?
Robben Island was a microcosm of apartheid as it existed outside. In other words, there were different laws applying to different communities. I'm an Indian, South African. The whites were, of course, treated the best, but they were not with us on the island. And the blacks were at the bottom of the ladder. So that the first thing when we landed on the island, all my colleagues, my leaders, Mr. Mandela and others, because they were black, they had to wear short trousers.
Short trousers.
I was given long trousers. Mm-hmm. I was given long trousers. In the mornings with the breakfast, we had the same breakfast, but I was given more sugar. Not that mine was too much, but more sugar than Mandela, but less than our political colleagues who are white. I was given a quarter loaf of bread every day. Mr. Mandela was given bread for the first time after 10 years. So that was a microcosm of how apartheid applied in the whole of South Africa, in everything.
Obviously, that time does bring back emotion for Ahmed Kathrada. Here's more of our conversation about his friendship with Nelson Mandela. How was Nelson Mandela? We know how inspirational he was when he walked out of that prison. How inspirational was he inside the prison?
Absolutely. Immediately on our arrival, he spoke to us on behalf, and he always insists he belongs to a collective. So he was speaking to us on behalf of the other three most senior leaders of the ANC. And he said, we are no longer leaders. Our leaders are outside the country. We are ordinary prisoners. We don't make policy. We don't give instructions. And he behaved like an ordinary prisoner. No preferential treatment. 1977, he was offered release. After 13 years, he refused. 1965, all of us were offered release. Most of us refused, a handful just accepted. But in prison work, you know, there was hard work at the lime quarry with pick and shovels. He was with us.
So he refused to see himself as above or more than, even though the whites considered him a leader in the movement and blacks outside the prison did as well. He refused to see himself that way. You know, tell us why you were arrested. What had you done?
Well, after the African National Congress and the Pan-Africanist Congress were declared illegal in 1960, there was no more room for peaceful protest. Any peaceful protest was crushed by the police and the army. That is when Mr. Mandela took the initiative to go on to what was called an armed struggle. I must immediately say we never envisaged an armed victory or a military victory. This was going to be in addition to the pressures of the political struggle in the country, strikes and boycotts and so forth, and the international solidarity, a combination of those to force the enemy to the negotiating table. That was the aim of the armed struggle as well. The armed struggle consisted of training recruits in the manufacture and planting of bombs, and these bombs were planted in all these institutions where you had signs saying non-Europeans not allowed, non-Europeans and dogs not allowed, Europeans only. So those were destroyed in the bombs. But an oath had to be taken that when bombs are placed, no harm will be done to human beings. So that's how the armed struggle was conducted, and that's what we were eventually arrested for and sentenced.
But people were killed.
There were very few incidents where units of this of our armed wing, against discipline, one placed a bomb outside a restaurant and another one in Church Street, which it was aimed at the army, but unfortunately some civilians also suffered. But those were just very few incidents. Definitely less than 10 people were killed. And that was, as I say, as a result of the units not sticking to discipline.
But also a turning point came after black students in Soweto were fired on, and leaders like Ahmed Kathrada and Nelson Mandela realized peaceful protest wasn't working. When we come back, how did these men get to forgiveness?
But first, a quick check of some of the other stories that we're following. President Obama's looking for a new Homeland Security director and someone to fill 14 other top jobs in that agency. And Somalia was polio-free just 6 years ago. Now it is home to the worst outbreak in the world. Those stories later on All Things Considered. We're back in a minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from GEICO, protecting drivers and their families with insurance coverage for over 75 years. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's Here and Now, and we have been hearing a conversation with Ahmed Kathrada, an Indian South African who fought apartheid alongside Nelson Mandela, then also spent 26 years in prison with him. Kathrada went on to serve in the first government post-apartheid. He was elected to parliament and appointed political advisor to the new President Mandela. He now heads the Museum Council for Robben Island, the prison where they were both jailed for 18 out of the 26 or 27 years they were jailed. And he takes world leaders on tours, recently President Obama, but in the past, former foes, like the then Prime Minister of Britain, Margaret Thatcher. Before the break, we were hearing from Ahmed about the history of the struggle against apartheid, the white minority government's incredible and undeniable oppression of the black and colored South Africans. I asked Ahmed if he finds himself today watching other uprisings around the world and thinking of the one he was a part of.
Well, for instance, we were called terrorists by Margaret Thatcher, by President Reagan, by all the Western powers, except for the Scandinavian countries. We were called terrorists. They would have nothing to do with us. But we had the approach that one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. The civil society throughout the world, including America, did not consider us to be terrorists. The communist countries were our very big allies. And then, of course, India, which had been liberated. The African countries were being liberated in the 60s, and as they were liberated, they became our friends.
On the other hand, you took Margaret Thatcher through Robben Island, this, of course, years later. I mean, I know you try to be fair when you do the tours, but how do you keep yourself from saying something to someone who was behind your being imprisoned there?
No, but when we forgave our oppressors. I mean, the others were not the same. Our oppressors were the main people who were our enemies. We forgave them. And our policy of non-racialism was politically and in practice the only correct alternative we had. Because unlike other colonial countries, the Portuguese went home from Mozambique and Angola. The British went home from India. The Spaniards went home. Our oppressors had no other home. And there were not a few thousand. There were a couple of million. This was their country. They were born here. They had no other home. So practically and politically, we had no alternative but to forgive them and to work towards making them, towards getting them into a united South Africa. Bitterness, anger, revenge, those are negative emotions. And people who harbor them suffer more than the people towards whom it is directed. So it was not difficult. And besides that, you must also remember that our struggle was a struggle for a non-racial South Africa. So whites also were assassinated. Whites were tortured to death. Whites were hanged. So they also underwent suffering. They also made sacrifices. Not in large numbers, but they were there together with us in the struggle. So there was no difficulty whatsoever in the transformation.
Well, now we come to this place we are in this road, very long road, and we hope that it's even longer. We hope it's a much longer road for Nelson Mandela. But I'm just wondering, how are you feeling watching this dramatic hospital vigil? You were there at his birthday celebration. What was that like?
Sadness mixed with a festive atmosphere. That was a cutting of cake and singing and all that. But there were hundreds and hundreds of people. I'm sure he could have listened to the crowds.
So you think that he heard through the hospital walls?
The singing was so, and the slogan shouting was so loud, he must have heard. He must have heard in his hospital bed.
But do you find yourself wondering a world without him?
Oh, yes. You know, he retired from the presidentship in 1999. He retired from public life in 2004. He took no part in politics after that. But he is an individual in the history of the world, and individuals come and go, as great as they were, as irreplaceable as they are. They leave us one day, but the country goes on, the nation goes on. There would be reasons for concern if policy changes, but there is no sign whatsoever that there's going to be a change of policy. That's entrenched in the constitution of the country, and there is no desire whatsoever to change the constitution. So our whole policy of non-racialism, non-sexism is entrenched in our constitution. And the ruling party is wedded to that.
He's done his work.
He has done his work. He's fighting till the end. He was a fighter. But when I did visit him a few weeks ago, it was quite an emotional, traumatic experience. Because here's a man whom I knew for 67 years. When I met him, I was a schoolboy. He was at university. And he was a man I knew, I saw as a strong man. He was a boxer. He was a gymnast. And there I see a shadow of himself. It was quite a very difficult and emotional moment. But it was just a few minutes visit.
Well, I'm so glad you had it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. No, I'm glad that I was able to see him.
Well, Ahmed Kathrada, in Johannesburg, South Africa, one of the leaders of the struggle against apartheid, with, as we just heard, his friend Nelson Mandela. And for his struggle, he also spent 26 years in prison. Ahmed, thanks so much for speaking with us. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having us, and everything of the best to you and the listeners.
Okay. We will take a break. On the other side, President Obama is heading to the Midwest to talk about the economy, but he's bound to be asked about last Friday's deeply personal reaction to the Trayvon Martin shooting and the George Zimmerman verdict. It was the talk of the weekend shows. Senator John McCain on CNN, his response when asked what he thought about the president's question about the 20-state stand-your-ground laws.
I can also see that stand your ground law may be something that needs to be reviewed by the Florida legislature or any other legislature that has passed such legislation. Obviously, a lot of things need to come up for review. Events like this that highlight and emphasize the fact that we still have a long way to go. And I think the president very appropriately highlighted a lot of that as only a president of the United States can.
And on Saturday, there were gatherings in support of George Zimmerman, others in support of the Martin family. And Trayvon Martin came up at one of the biggest concert tours of this summer season. Jay-Z and Justin Timberlake performed this weekend at Yankee Stadium. And as you can hear, they just dedicated that song, Forever Young, to Trayvon Martin. We'll be back here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from Lumosity.com, dedicated to improving memory and attention with neuroscience-based games for the brain at Lumosity.com. And Brilliant Earth, committed to environmental and social responsibility with conflict-free diamond engagement rings, wedding rings, and other fine jewelry. Online at BrilliantEarth.com.